It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 40 degrees out at the airport. Sail Drone says it is 41, and our outside thermometer is saying 49. Not sure where Willie put that after I mistakenly tore it out of its former spot. Coming up on the Midday Report, a state corporation is making another big push to get an 800-mile-long natural gas pipeline built. The National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration has published its new normals. They've gone up, the temperature, that is. And a group of hikers ran into an aggressive bear in Seward. And for one person, there was a little deja vu involved. Those stories and more right after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Donald Trump remains banned from Facebook. NPR's Shannon Bond reports the social network's oversight board says the company has 6 months to decide whether to let the former president back or make the ban permanent.
Facebook's oversight board, which reviews difficult content decisions, says the social network was justified when it suspended Donald Trump's account after the Capitol insurrection. But the board slammed Facebook for not setting a time limit on the suspension, calling that a, quote, vague, standardless penalty. Facebook now has 6 months to either restore Trump's account, suspend him for a specific period of time, or ban him permanently. The oversight board accused the company of trying to avoid responsibility for its decision. Facebook, which is among NPR's financial supporters, says it will follow the board's ruling and determine a, quote, clear and proportionate action on Trump's account. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
Trump blasted the board's decision and accused social media companies in general of being a threat to the U.S. electoral process. This as the ex-president perpetuates baseless claims that he was cheated out of a second term because of election fraud. Congresswoman Liz Cheney was among the few Republicans in Congress to publicly contradict Trump on that assertion. She also supported his impeachment in a second trial. Now she faces the threat of being removed from her position as chair of the House Republican Conference. Trump's endorsing Representative Elise Stefanik to replace Cheney. Today, President Biden reflected on the divisions playing out within the GOP.
It seems as though the Republican Party is trying to identify what it stands for. And they're in the midst of a significant sort of mini revolution going on in the Republican Party.
At a press conference today, Biden said the U.S. badly needs the Republican Party, a two-party system. He says the mini revolution facing the GOP is something different than what he's seen in the past. A federal judge has ruled that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention overstepped its authority by issuing a nationwide moratorium on evictions. But as NPR's Chris Arnold reports, lawyers for the CDC are appealing.
The case was brought by the Alabama Association of Realtors, which said basically that the CDC doesn't have the power to tell landlords that they can't evict people during a pandemic. The judge agreed. There have been a series of court rulings on the matter with conflicting decisions. This latest one, though, goes further and would strike down the eviction moratorium nationwide. But the appeals court could issue a stay, which would keep it in place for now. Meanwhile, millions of Americans are still behind on their rent and at risk of eviction. Housing groups say beyond the health risk, getting evicted makes it much harder to find another place to live, and they're worried that many families could wind up homeless. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
A state corporation is in the middle of making another big push to try to get an 800-mile-long natural gas pipeline built from the North Slope to the Kenai Peninsula. It's a massive project that's been talked about for a long time. As Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon reports, supporters say it'll be good for the state's economy and for energy costs, but critics argue it's way too expensive and it's time to give up on the pipe dream.
Since the pandemic started, Frank Richards has had nonstop Zoom meetings to pitch the gas pipeline project to investors. Richards is the president of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, or AGDC.
And so on a daily basis, I sit and look at my screen and interact with folks in that virtual regime to be able to identify why Alaska is a great place to invest and why this project will be cost competitive.
Richard's job is to develop the long talked about liquefied natural gas project. The project involves building a pipeline to move the gas that's already being pumped out of the ground on Alaska's North Slope, but is, as Richards puts it, currently stranded there.
That natural gas comes up with the oil every day and must then be recycled back down into the reservoir.
However, Richard says if the gas can be piped out, some could stay in the state to generate electricity and heat homes, and some gas could go to the Kenai Peninsula, where a plant would be built to liquefy it so it could be shipped out and sold. People started talking about building a gas pipeline soon after big natural gas reserves were discovered at Prudhoe Bay in the 1960s. But it never worked out, mainly because it's so expensive to build. And that's still the major issue today. It will cost nearly $6 billion just to pay for the project's first phase, a pipeline from the North Slope to Fairbanks. Richards is hoping to get most or all of that money from the federal government. But Larry Pursley, the guy who under former President Obama was tasked with trying to get the Alaska Gas Line constructed, says there's no way.
The notion of the federal government spending billions of dollars to underwrite, to subsidize a fossil fuel pipeline through the Arctic is preposterous.
Pursley says the economics just don't make sense to build the costly gas line plus the other facilities needed.
There's just no money in it. It's never worked out. It's never gotten built.
As he sees it, companies will always invest in projects with the least amount of risk and best potential for profit. And Alaska's LNG project just doesn't stack up. He says it's time to let it go.
I mean, I do feel bad for the people who are working on it and want it. It's just, I wanted to be a pitcher in baseball. Well, at some point I realized I'm 70 years old. I'm probably not going to be a major league pitcher. I need to move on.
But Richards, with the AGDC, strongly disagrees. He says he's optimistic that Congress will add money for the gas pipeline in its infrastructure bill. Even if it doesn't, he says the project is not dead. The idea is that AGDC would hand over the gas line project to the private sector. Richards says he's talking to companies that want to take over different parts of the project.
They would not continue if they thought that this was not a viable project.
Who those companies are, though, is still a secret. AGDC says it won't reveal their names yet because negotiations are ongoing and confidential. Richard says the goal is to announce the private companies later this year. The state will also have to decide what stake, if any, it wants to keep in the project. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
Every 10 years, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, analyzes data from its thousands of weather stations and releases new climate normals, providing temperature touchstones for any given day or month of the year. NOAA's latest batch of data came out Tuesday. As Sabine Pooks from the Alaska's Energy Desk reports, the data shows how South Central Alaska and the country as a whole is heating up.
Brian Bruttschneider is a research physical scientist with the National Weather Service Alaska Region. He's been looking at the new data for a while. It's a lot of information.
My computer is, you know, basically smoke is coming out of it. I'm trying to crunch some numbers.
The agency comes up with what are, in a sense, 30-year averages. And the data come from 250 weather stations in Alaska that collect daily observations. Some stations are managed by the Federal Aviation Administration, like the one near the Kenai Municipal Airport. But most data around the state is collected by citizen observers. Taken together, they provide a sort of climactic census. The last one covered the three decades between 1981 and 2010. This one spans 1991 to 2020. That means there's 20 years of overlap between the data sets.
In a sense, what we're doing is we're dropping out the 1980s and we're adding in the 2010s.
The new numbers highlight a trend of rising temperatures in Alaska and the U.S. as a whole. For much of south-central Alaska, including the Kenai, Homer, and Anchorage areas, the change in annual normal temperature is between a half degree to a degree. Brett Schneider says disparities between new and old average temperatures are smaller in southeast Alaska. In western Alaska and above the Arctic Circle, they're larger. In Fairbanks, a change in average temperature during 1 month of the year will trigger a change in how the region's classified. As climate specialist Rick Toman pointed out on Twitter, the average temperature for May changed from a hair below 50 degrees by the last measure to a hair over this time around. That means the region is technically reclassified from a subarctic climate to a warm summer continental climate under what's known as the Köppen classification. It's in part a semantic change, but Brett Schneider says it's also noteworthy.
We would expect that there's going to be any number of stations that incrementally move from one climate zone to the next. And then again, you don't necessarily feel incremental changes, but incremental changes are changes nonetheless. And the next time around, more stations will have that incremental change.
He says even seemingly small differences in temperature are significant because many parts of Alaska teeter on the edge of freezing for much of the year.
And major things happen once we move from one side of that line to another.
The new data accounts for changes in precipitation too, but that change is more difficult to gauge, Brett Schneider says, because there's so much variability year to year. But he says there does seem to be an overall increase in precipitation. That's generally expected with a warming climate, since warmer air can hold more moisture. For a link to those new normals, visit the online version of this story at kdll.org. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Several groups of hikers ran into an aggressive black bear at Tonsina Creek last week. Bear encounters are scary for anyone, but for at least one hiker involved, her encounter also invoked a little bit of deja vu. KDLL Sabine Pooks has this story.
The odds of getting attacked by a bear are 1 in over 2 million. That's why Sarah Wallner, who was mauled by a grizzly in 2007, could not believe her misfortune when she and two friends ended up in a standoff with a black bear at Tonsina Creek in Seward on Thursday.
Oh, not again. This is not happening. Like, this is not supposed to happen again.
All three were okay, but the hikers say for the 2-ish minutes the standoff lasted, they weren't so sure what was going to happen. It wasn't an isolated incident. Alaska State Parks Ranger Jack Ransom says his department got 3 separate reports Thursday and Friday about a large, aggressive black bear on the Tonsina Creek Trail. On Monday, park officials killed the bear and sent it to a charity for harvest. Regina Green, Niels Green, and Wallner, who have a cabin at Lowell Point, say they've heard of more bear encounters in that area in the last 2 years than ever before. They've been hesitant about hiking there for that reason. But on Thursday, they decided to try the Tonsina Creek Trail anyway. Regina says they were crossing the Tonsina Bridge on their way back when their dog came running toward them.
And I was turned back around, so I heard this super loud, like, thundering. And I thought Niels was playing around, like, going boom, 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 like, on the bridge.
That's when Wallner saw a black bear had followed the dog onto the bridge. She and Regina jumped away to the other side of the railing. But Niels, who was standing in the middle of the bridge, was facing the other way and didn't see it.
And I'm like, Niels! Bear!
But Bear had also been Wallner's nickname since she was attacked.
So he was like, what?
When Niels turned around, he was just 2 feet away from the bear. He had a beach ball he'd picked up on the beach and stuck it between him and the bear as a buffer. Every time Niels tried to back away, the bear came closer. He thinks they stood like that for 2 minutes.
And I was talking to it, going, Bear, don't try nothing. You need to go, Bear.
I thought, in that situation that I would be more, like, helpful. But I, like, jumped away over the bridge. And our bear spray was in the backpack in the side pocket.
Regina grabbed the bear spray out of her backpack and handed it to Niels.
And then I grabbed the bear spray and I spray it. And that's what gets it going.
And then it walked away. But if we didn't have the spray,
we don't know what would happen.
It wasn't leaving. It was, and he tried to, like, take a step back, and it just stayed.
Wallner says she wishes she and Regina had gotten big behind Niels.
You know all of what you're supposed to do, but it's very hard to do it in those moments.
They didn't report it to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but did immediately post about the incident in Seward community groups on Facebook to warn others who were thinking of hiking in the area. Ransom, the park ranger, says park officials killed the bear in part because it didn't seem to be afraid of people.
And in this case, the bear wasn't going anywhere and it continued to threaten public safety.
It's not uncommon to get reports of aggressive bears, but Ransom says it is uncommon to have to shoot one.
In this particular park, we have not had to do this in a long time, at least 10 years.
He says they salvaged the bear and donated it to charity. The Alaska State Troopers have a list they can call to salvage and harvest wildlife meat when a situation like this one arises. Nick Fowler, area wildlife biologist for Fish and Game, says recreationists should be bear aware as the bears start emerging from their dens.
The best thing that we can do is to stop conflicts from happening in the first place. And our best tool against that is to manage our track dens that are going to potentially bring bears into close proximity with people.
He says that means securing trash and any other attractants. He also says people should make sure they have control of their pets.
And that's a concern for pet safety as well as animal safety. You know, we don't want wildlife being attracted to an area because pets are off leash. We also don't want dogs chasing wildlife.
Wallner and the Greens say they recommend keeping dogs on leashes in the area since their dogs seem to bring the bear to them. They also say having bear spray is a lifesaver. Though they're physically fine, the three are a bit rattled after their run-in.
So now we're just sitting in front of the cabin painting rocks because I think we want to
go hiking today.
We're going to take up more kayaking this year.
For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The locals who want to limit cruise ship traffic in Juneau can begin collecting signatures to get their three proposals on the next municipal election ballot. KTOO's Jeremy Shea went to City Hall on Monday when the lead sponsor picked up the official signature booklets.
Carla Hart is leading the push to limit the cruise industry in Juneau.
May I borrow this hand truck?
I was going to say, let's walk the hand truck out. Thank you.
City Clerk Beth McEwen helped deliver 225 official signature gathering booklets to Hart's Honda hatchback outside City Hall. Volunteer Steve Krall got the first few booklets.
You can be number one, eh, Steve?
Oh boy, that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's a great thing for somebody who doesn't like talking to people to be doing.
Well, you could be number two if you want.
Carr says that sentiment is pretty common among the volunteers.
A lot of people who do this, including myself, are driven by our passion, but it's not necessarily in our nature walking out and talking to lots of people.
Right. If they support these limits, it's in part because they're not into big crowds. Hart is proposing three amendments to the city's charter targeting cruise ships. One would make Juneau off limits to them between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. One would ban them on Saturdays. And one would ban ships over a certain size beginning in 2026. If all three were in effect next year, the local opposition group Protect Juneau's Future has roughly estimated they would cut passenger visits to Juneau to a quarter of what's expected. The group says the lost cruise ship traffic would have ripple effects beyond the visitor industry, including lost tax revenue that pays for city services the entire community benefits from. Hart says the lost passenger estimate assumes the cruise lines wouldn't rotate in smaller ships, and that cruise lines with smaller ships wouldn't fill openings the bigger ships give up. Hart says it also assumes sudden changes, but if voters approve the size limit, it wouldn't take effect until 2026.
Their job is to make the sky fall, and or to make it appear that the sky will fall. I don't believe that it will.
For each of the three proposed ballot questions, Hart and her volunteers will need to get nearly 3,000 qualified signatures by June 2nd. To be valid, a signature must be from someone registered to vote who's lived in Juneau for at least 30 days before signing. The questions could appear on ballots in the next regular municipal election on October 5th. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Updates on COVID impacts to Alaska seafood industry. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
A drop in dock prices stemming from the COVID pandemic was the biggest hit to Alaska fishermen over the past year, followed by planning and logistics. Those were just two of the takeaways from a report compiled by McKinley Research Group for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute at its recent Board of Directors meeting.
The report said actual 2020 revenues may go up due to increases in post-season payments to salmon harvesters. At Bristol Bay, for example, many received up to 45 cents more per pound, on top of the average base price of 70 cents paid last summer. Of roughly 100 fishermen, nearly half said they received COVID relief payments, not including the Paycheck Protection Program. The same number said they did not. Of that, 21% said it was due to a lack of awareness about relief programs. For Alaska processors, costs above and beyond those normally incurred added up to roughly $70 million last year. They expect to pay over $100 million this year, due mostly to travel and quarantine-related expenses. Alaska's seafood industry reflected a 21% decline for crew licenses from the previous year and a 31% decline in peak employment for processing workers. The value of the total 2020 harvest was down 20-25% to an estimated $1.5 billion and down 16% in export value and volume from 2019. The Alaska Department of Revenue spring forecast estimates that fisheries business and landing taxes for FY 2021 will total $47.8 million, a 19% decrease from the previous year. COVID impacts are expected to be even more challenging this year due to trade disputes, climate change impacts, and increased competition, including from plant-based foods. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the fifth day of April, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 6:08, won't set again until 10:07. That will give us 15 hours and 59 minutes of daylight, almost 16 hours, a gain of 4 minutes and 31 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 26, set in 1920. Our record high was 69, set in 2004. That record is safe, although it has bumped up to 43 degrees. And we're still looking for scattered showers this afternoon and tonight. High near 44 today and a low of around 34 tonight. Northeast wind to 10 miles per hour. For tomorrow, they are continuing to call for sunny skies. High near 48, west wind to 10 miles per hour. So just about as nice a day as it could possibly be tomorrow. But then partly cloudy skies overnight on Thursday night. And probably a little more rain and chances of rain all the way through next Tuesday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 4:51 p.m. That will be a 0.7-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:36 p.m. That will be a 6.9-foot tide. Our next low tide for the morning on the east side will be at 5:31 a.m. and be 2.4 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 11:20 a.m. and be 6.6 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 5:27 p.m. That will be a 2-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 11:54 p.m. and be 12.5 feet. The low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:07 a.m. and be 3.4 feet. And your noontime high tide on the west side will be at 12 p.m. and be 11.6 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A trough will move from the eastern Gulf to Kodiak Island for Wednesday afternoon. A front will enter the southwest Gulf for Friday morning. They're just visiting. Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. We're looking at northeast wind to 20 knots right now, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, look for northwest 15, becoming southwest tomorrow afternoon, seas coming down to 4 feet on our east side offshore. For the Shelikof Strait, Kodiak's west side, northeast 20 right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10 becoming southwest 15 tomorrow afternoon. Seas coming down to 3 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay, northeast 15 right now, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet. So just a beautiful day tomorrow. It's going to be a heck of a day to get out on the water if you can. Up in Marmot Bay, northeast 15 right now, seas to 4 feet. And in Marmot Bay tomorrow, west wind to 10 knots, seas to 2 feet, sunny skies. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a meeting tomorrow night. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. They're having a spring plant sale. It's a community fundraiser to benefit KMXT. It's happening this Saturday at 12 noon at 1223 West Kuskov Street. And they're featuring veggie, flower, herb seedlings, perennials, rhubarb, shrubs, indoor plants, just about anything you could think of. For more information and to donate plants, call 539-5009. That's 539-5009. That DC electrical class for vessels has been moved to this weekend, so if you were bummed you didn't make last weekend, it is now happening this weekend on the 7th and 8th. That's Friday and Saturday. And what a class for any kind of mariners that are going to go out on a boat with DC electrical, and just about all of them do. This workshop is for all beginners who want to learn basic theory and practices. It's for women and men. You practice just about everything. They give you theory, a good working knowledge of DC electrical. There's no testing, just learning. And the workshop is appropriate for ages 14 and up. There is a class fee. And for more information, call 486-1209 or email lestewart@alaska.edu. But again, that number, 486-1209. Celebrate Mother's Day with the library by making beautiful tissue paper flowers. An instructional video is already posted on the library's website, and you can call 486-8686 to reserve your materials. Try to do that before May 8th. Have you heard the buzz? On May 11th at 11 a.m., the Kodiak Public Library is bringing back the Community Beekeeping Project with the first hive check of the summer. Call the library to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper, or you can watch from inside. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. For any information about the library, call 486-8686. Celebrate World Migratory Bird Day on this Saturday, May 8th. Kodiak Audubon and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge will host Dave Dorsey and his snowy owl, Ghost. That's happening virtually this Saturday at noon. Ghost will be present for the first 15 minutes of the Zoom session, so you don't want to be late. After that, Dave will be happy to answer questions following a short presentation. If you need to register for that, and you need to register, please visit kodiakaudubon.blogspot.com or just go to their Facebook page, the Kodiak Audubon Facebook page, and you will find a link to register. If you still have any more questions, call Cindy at 486-2878. The Kodiak Arts Council and the Frame Shop invite Kodiak artists to submit new original creative work to be included in the 21st Annual Crab Festival Art Show. The show will accept and feature artwork by Kodiak artists completed within the past 3 years. Eligible media include, but are not limited to, drawing, painting, photography, mixed media, pastels, block and ink print, pottery, sculpture, collage, digital art, metalwork, jewelry design, fiber and textile art, and woodwork. So just about everything. The art show will be staged in person downtown at the Fisherman's Hall, right next to all the fun of the festival. The deadline to register for a participating artist is May 21st, and complete guidelines and a link for to the online submission form can be found at kodiakarts.org or theframeshopak.com. The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, or AMSEA, and the Alaska Sea Grant will offer a fishing vessel drill instructor class in Kodiak, Alaska on May 13th. So that's happening at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's just next week. And it's at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island on 118 Trident Way. The cost for the class is $125 for commercial fishermen and $175 for all others. Interested mariners may register online at www.amsea.org, or you can call 747-3287. Really is a terrific class.
Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.